What is up, everybody? This is the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Rock Spotlight's mission is to connect others through an educational podcast. Each episode will highlight someone from Rochester, New York, in the health and wellness space who is thinking outside of the box, providing exceptional products and or services, and is elevating our community. Make sure to stay tuned after the podcast for more information on my practice, on my approach to healing, and a little bit more about myself. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, and today we'll be discussing movement, reaction time, compensation patterns, and so much more. I have a former professional baseball player and current baseball coach specializing in skill development and mental improvement on the podcast to talk about one of my favorite topics, human movement. Let's meet our special guest. John Schwinn graduated from Hilton High School and Marist College, where he played baseball. He was drafted his junior year by the Pittsburgh Pirates and played seven seasons in the organization, reaching every level except the major leagues. After his playing career, he coached two seasons with the Pirates, finishing up at the AAA level. Currently, he works and trains athletes that are in the major leagues, minor leagues, collegiate level, high school level, and youth level, with the focus being more on optimal movement. John's focus is geared towards the individual with the goal of helping athletes become their best coaches. Welcome to the podcast, John. What's going on, bud?
Thanks for having me, Matt. I appreciate you bringing me in.
You bet, man. Let's talk movement. I love movement. You do too. Let's talk about it. So, love it. What or who inspired you, John, to work in the health and wellness field?
Yeah, so I think it kind of is a culmination of where my career has kind of taken off in terms of baseball, like that journey. You know, I went to college from a small town and, you know, was fortunate enough to be able to play in college. And then, you know, it kind of really wasn't on my mind. Of course, you have like your dream and, you know, what your aspirations are to play professional baseball. I don't know if I really thought that that was a possibility when I went to college, and it kind of just progressed to, you know, after my sophomore year, I had a good year. Junior, I was fortunate enough to get drafted. And then my career was kind of strange. I had a lot of injuries. So I played 7 years, but I was only healthy for 2 full seasons. So there was just a lot of downtime where I was rehabbing. And, you know, at the time, you're not really kind of thinking about what that might lead to, because you're still focused on, you know, your goals in the present and, you know, my goal of trying to get to the major leagues. And and before you know it, you know, I had been hurt in so many different areas. And then I had a really major injury in 2015. And all of a sudden I'm like grasping all this knowledge and learning about my body and learning about things that I've done wrong for years. And then you kind of combo that with, I went to school for psych special ed. So my major, I was originally trying to be a teacher if I hadn't been drafted. Obviously I got drafted, those plans changed, ended up just shifting it to straight psychology, but I was very, very into developing my mind and understanding how I thought, and just basically trying to condition, you know, my thoughts so that I could improve, you know, whether it's my marriage, whether it's in life, whether it's on the field. So kind of learning about the body in that way, and then understanding kind of how the brain works, and meshing those together. After I was done playing, I had trained guys for years, you know, in the off season. And so it kind of just ran its course, and my wife couldn't travel with me to coach professionally last year. So we took the year off, and then before you knew it, I had a business, and now that's what I'm doing.
Love it. So that totally doesn't surprise me at all. You majored in psychology because we met through some of your injuries, and not to get too much into that, we'll probably talk about that later, but brain-based. I mean, you're just so passionate about that, and you're such a sponge when it comes to learning. I can tell that just when you're a patient here, and that shows in your training, and that shows in you just want to keep improving and use the brain and impact the brain to physically and mentally be a better athlete. So Tell us more about your professional baseball stint.
Yeah, so like I said, got drafted my junior year out of Marist. Actually got drafted as a catcher, and I had never caught before. So they kind of taught me how to do that for a couple of years. I just wasn't as skilled as some of the guys that I was behind at the time. I could always hit a little bit. So they kind of moved me back, and I, you know, played outfield. I played some infield. But majority of my career was injuries. So 2011, I got drafted. I played half that. I played that season. It's really only half a season because you get drafted in the middle of the year. So I got played that season. 2012, played about, I want to say a month, and I broke my arm. I got hit by a pitch. So I was out for, I think, 12 or 14 weeks with that. It was a pretty clean break, but kind of one of the things that they, I don't know if they were testing this on me or I'm pretty sure there's this law. It's not like Murphy's law of physics, but there's this some sort of bone law called Murphy's something where they try to put more stress on the bone to hopefully get blood flow more in that area. And so after about 4 weeks, I was swinging already, and it just did not heal. It did not heal. And I had to go back into not using it and went on a bone stimulator, all that. So injured that year, I actually ended up getting back at the end of the year. I was back for about 5 games. I got hit by another pitch. I broke my thumb. So that year was kind of a wash. 2013, I played. I was played the whole year. 2014, broke my hamate in my hand. So I broke my hand about halfway through the year. I came back in 15, probably in the best shape of my life, actually. And then I played, I think I only played 4 games. In the second week, I ruptured my spleen. So I ended up having a splenectomy. And then 16, I played that whole year. That was my other year. And then 17 was kind of my last year where everything kind of went off. I ended up tearing, I tore my internal oblique. I tore my external oblique, rehabbed that for about 12 weeks. And then literally that next week I tore an intercostal muscle. They were all grade 3. So they were pretty much just shot. And then I came back at the end of that year and I did well. And then that was kind of when I went into coaching. So a lot of injuries. But again, I think I tell people this all the time. I watched a lot of baseball when I played, and a lot of people would think that you want to be on the field. And they're right. Like, of course you want to be in the action, but I learned so much more from watching than I learned from playing. And so it really helped develop what I knew was important. And I think that's kind of what I'm going to talk about is allowing your brain to actually know what's important, not only with, you know, logical thinking of movement, but also what's important, you know, in your daily life and what your daily goals are and what you have aspirations for. And if you're not really sure of that, it makes it a really, really cloudy situation, where, you know, you're not really able to take risks. You're not really able to, you know, understand exactly where you're going, even if you don't know where you're going, that makes sense. There's just not a lot of conviction. So, baseball career was strange, but I definitely know it helped me build a lot of conviction in different options that I have now.
A lot of mental reps, and you're also an orthopedic dream right there, man. Lots of injuries. Yeah. you learn a lot though from an injury. I mean, I had several injuries with football, and man, it just humbles you, and you have to take a step back and you learn from them. So that's probably shaped you into the trainer you are today from all those, for sure. So why does movement matter in your opinion?
So, you know, it's different in baseball. You know, basic movement doesn't really change for anything. You know, you're dealing more with like healthy lifestyles and just helping people do daily activities that they need to be able to do or that they've done their whole life. And something is not allowing them to do that. You know, when I'm dealing with more specific athletes, especially baseball players, where baseball is so rotational, and it's a very powerful and violent movement, but there's also a linear component to it because there's foul lines and ball has to go in a certain direction. It really comes down to understanding how each individual body is at that current time. You know, I had great posture, and I talk a lot about pelvic health and understanding how your pelvis is actually, I guess you could say shaped or tilted or whatever we need to discuss. But I talk a lot about that because you are dealing with something that is in the trunk and you are dealing with a rotational movement on a literally play-to-play basis. So if you have no understanding of your midsection and your lower half, it's going to be really, really hard, number one, to be consistent and repeatable. And then the second piece, it's going to be really hard to avoid injury. So when I'm seeing someone for the first time, I have to understand how their body moves at that current time. And if I don't, well, then I'm doing a disservice to them. And I'm training them like someone else that has a completely different body, completely different limbs, lengths, whatever. I fell into this a lot when I played. You know, I was saying at the beginning of this, you know, this talk right now that I had great posture when I got into pro ball, and I had great posture really until I ruptured my spleen. And then I came back from my splenectomy and I tried to do the exact same things that I had done before, the exact same manner, exact same techniques, and it was off. And at the time, I don't think I really knew why. But then I started understanding, you know, my body has changed. Like, yeah, I could rehab and I could focus on more functional movement, and that would take a long time, right? But yep. Baseball is not you have to play every day. So you have what you have, and you have to understand how your body moves, or it's going to be really hard to train. It's going to be really hard to get better. And then you're talking about a game that is so much failure based that now if you don't understand that and you're not getting results that you desire on the field, now you're affecting the brain, and all of a sudden it's just a downward spiral and it kind of impacts everything. So
what exactly is your movement screening process when working with an athlete?
I think it depends on, I do have some specific things that I do with a lot of guys, especially with hitting. We're dealing more with understanding your feet, which is obviously going to connect, your lower half up to your pelvis. And then, you know, the upper half, I'm not really worried about the first couple times that I work with someone. So a lot of times I want to know how they can have heel connection. Basically, how can they have both feet in the ground at the same time? And where do they need to be in terms of posture? So, you know, hitting would be more of it's a rotational movement, but there is some linear component of going forward with your feet. You're going to get to basically the strongest position that you could get in. But when you rotate, both feet have to be in the ground at some point. And the upper half gets affected a lot by, does this lower half have stability? Is it able to stay still so that your hips can actually rotate flat? Or is there a lot of movement from one foot to the other and too much energy transfer where you're anchoring, you know, more on one side than the other? So usually what I do, it's something really simple, but I have guys stand with their feet together and I have them jump and I have them land flat footed. So basically I always say pancake your feet. So they're going to jump, they're going to pancake their feet and get as full footed as they can. And it's going to tell me a lot about their pelvis, number one, depending on if they have any, you know, deficiencies, they have any anterior tilt, which almost every baseball player does because you're constantly bent over, whether it's a fielding position or throwing position or whatever, right? But it tells me a lot about where they're going to have to start and where they're going to have to land. So, you know, like when I hit before I had my injury, I had great posture, right? Very good pelvic health. You know, I didn't have any, I had never had any muscular injuries, nothing like that. I was pretty even with my feet. So I probably had bowed feet, which is, you know, had a very centered pelvis, you know, midline was very, very compact. So if I were to, you know, get set up in my stance, my feet would be perfectly even, right? And that would be an ideal person. But if you see, you know, a lot of players, they're taught like you have to land even. And what I mean landing even is hitting, you take a load and your front foot goes forward, right? Mm-hmm. The main thing is you can't ever land open with your front foot, and you can't ever land closed. Everybody always says you got to land even. Well, that's not true. That's if a person's body is not capable of doing that, where they can land full footed, when they take their load, well, then they shouldn't be landing even. So I do that test so that I can see where their feet are both flat in the ground. And then I kind of can go from there and we can diagnose if there's any deficiencies with ankle mobility or stability, or if they've had any previous injuries. But yeah, it tells me a lot about what their lower half is capable of doing. And then we can assess further as we start the swing.
I love that objectivity. That's a good test right there. Hey, you would have been so much easier to treat before all these injuries when you had good posture.
Yes.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yes, I would have, for sure.
That's okay though. I like challenges. Let's go. So elite athletes can have very aggressive compensation patterns. You and I both know that from being so explosive. How do you override these patterns to make safer, stronger, more functional movement patterns in their nervous systems?
I think that's the key right there, is like you are trying to rewrite and remap things, right? And that's where that's my goal. I approach hitting very, very differently than coaches that I've had in the past, right? I don't base it on the swing. I base it on movement. If I can get someone to move the right way, they'll be consistent. You know, hand-eye development is basically developed from 6 to 9. That's like motor learning at its peak. And then after that, it's very, very marginal gains. So when I'm dealing with like advanced level athletes, I don't have to train hand-eye, right? I got to train their body to move so that they have consistent stability and still vision. And then their body can repeat itself and it becomes a whole lot easier and a lot more simple. Take very sophisticated information and simplify it. So when you're dealing with more of these compensation patterns, a lot of those compensation patterns, I believe, and this is what I've seen more, they get developed because of someone training a habit wrong. And then they get so stuck in this manner because this is how they were told, or this is how someone else that they've looked at has hit. Yep. And they try to emulate it, not understanding like, listen, my body is very different than this person's. And then before you know it, they end up developing a habit. You know, I talk about this there's a guy in the Padres. I don't mean for this to sound bad. I don't know how far this podcast is going to go, Matt, but
we'll see. After this one, it's going to take off, man.
One of their best players, Fernando Tatis Jr., he's an amazing player. And there's something called call it in baseball, a scissor kick. It's basically where you rotate and then you push your back leg backwards to give you space if the pitch is inside. I don't know if you can picture that. Mm-hmm. But baseball is rotational. So if you don't understand how to decelerate and you don't have deceleration patterns, you don't know how to slow the body down evenly and efficiently, right? You're leaving something on your body that is very susceptible to be injured and be used more than it should, right? And this would be a perfect aggressive compensation pattern. Mm-hmm. So this guy is only 20, I believe he's 23, and he does this move a lot. So if you could visualize that, he takes his swing, he starts to slow down rotationally in his back leg, which is his right leg. He kicks it backwards behind him. So you could picture your back would have to really, really arch and really, really brace to slow you down, or else, you know, that your front shoulder would just fly out and you'd separate your shoulder, all that good stuff. Okay. Well, he does this all the time. Well, he's 23 years old. What do you think he has already had injuries with? He's already fractured his lower back.
Yeah.
And he's already had a front shoulder separation on a swing because the body is not decelerating evenly.
Yeah.
It's not a compact move. It's a very violent move and a very skilled move. Doesn't mean he's not a great hitter with it, but as he gets older, and the body and posture start to change, and he's not as, you know, efficient in certain areas, whether he gets taller or he gains more weight or just the, you know, how your body starts to age. If he does that more and more, the body's just not going to be able to handle it. It's going to break down. So you have to start from the lower half. I guess I could have made this a lot shorter, but you got to start from the lower half to make it as compact in the ground as we possibly can. Search for heel connection, find heel connection. I do a lot of implicit learning and a lot of implicit drills for people to feel it. I get rid of sensory information. So I have them close their eyes and do a lot of things. And once that lower half starts to be concrete, usually all those patterns start to get better. And then you see over time, as they get stronger and stronger in that position, you know, these patterns go away, their posture starts to get better. And before you know it, you can retest and reassess again, and they're in a much better spot.
Now, great answer, but how do you connect the dots? Like when I work with pro athletes, I find it hard and challenging mentally sometimes because they're so protective because they're at the peak, right? They've had their body be so strong and perform so well that they might not understand that, hey, like, I don't understand that compensation pattern. Like, no, that we've never had to deal with that, but you're a new trainer, you're a new doctor, and you're saying this way. So how do you connect the dots for them to be like, no, like mentally, like the aha moment? How do you do that?
I mean, I think you do this really well. I think when you have the knowledge, this is the generation now, right? This mm-hmm. generation wants answers. This is the first time ever where probably in the last 10 years, if you want an answer, you can open your phone, you can open Google, and you can type in anything you want, and you're going to have the answer, or at least a form of it in a matter of seconds, right?
That's so true.
It's hard, you know, like those days of just saying to do it, and then someone just does exactly what you tell them. Those are kind of going away where mm-hmm. you have to explain exactly what you're doing and you have to give them evidence of why you're doing this. So if you have that knowledge, I mean, I explain this all the time. I talk, you know, baseball is a lot about, we'll talk about it in a sec with timing and still vision of keeping your eyes so they don't move and have to recalibrate. That means you have to have really close to full foot with both feet when you land before you swing. Most hitters don't do that. They land heavy on the front toe and then they have to get the heel down to swing. And then the body just shifts forward, right? Eyes move up. And now all of a sudden their swing is not how it's supposed to be. So like one of the biggest things I always show guys, cause it's like an aha moment, is I tell them their feet follow each other. Like your feet are copycats. If you're mm-hmm. pushing, I talk a ton about foot pressure and understanding where you're pushing in your feet. If you're pushing in your toe and you lift, you're pushing in your front toe hard and you lift your back toe hard and you lift your front toe up to land, you're going to land in your front toe every time. Mm-hmm. You push that back, pushing the back toe, and you lift your front leg and you land, you will land in your front toe every single time first. It's not controllable because your body does that to balance itself. It's the same thing if you push in your heel really hard on the back foot and you lift your leg and land on your front foot, you're going to land heel on heel. It's going to be heel to heel. So they do that, all of a sudden they're like, holy cow, I'm not even trying to do this. And now all of a sudden that light bulb goes off of, oh, maybe I'm not moving as efficient as I can.
Yeah.
And then you teach from there. There's a lot of tricks. I think that's more of my psychology background where I'm analyzing how they respond. If they don't do something that I want them to do or feel, well, I'm not going to keep doing the same thing. If I keep saying the same thing, then I'm losing them and I'm not being a teacher, right? I'm trying to say something that my brain likes to hear.
Yeah. You got to care and you got to test, retest. You got to be objective and you got to show them right away that, wow, something changed there. Did you see the difference? Did you feel the difference? Yeah.
Yes.
And you do that well too. You're kind of like a podiatrist, man. You talk about feet a lot. I love it.
A ton. I talk about feet a lot.
That's good. That's your foundation. Yeah. So let's talk about, I think, the eyes here. So you've mentioned the reticular activating system. What the heck is that?
Yeah. So, you know, this dives into a little bit of psychology and, you know, mental conditioning, but it really is impactful. So basically it's a bundle of nerves, reticular activating system. I might shorten it. You hear me say the RAS, but, it's a bundle of nerves that's basically in the brain stem. I believe it's in the midbrain, which is going towards the top of the brain stem, I think, but, it's in the reticular formation, which, it's a part of your brain that allows you to filter out information on stuff that's not important. So it can store images, it stores all these different things that your brain thinks is important, but then when you need to recall it, it filters out everything. So it'd be the reason why, you know, you're in a crowd of people, but yet you can hear one person say your name, mm-hmm. right? Whether that's been in your brain before, It's something clear that's important for you. And it's going to help you see what you want to see. And then basically help that influence your actions. So if I went more into detail with it, basis of finding out what's important to you or reaching goals, and everybody has probably heard this, you need to see more or say more of what you want to see, right? You need to believe in what you're actually trying to aspire to do. And if
conviction,
100% intent, yeah. Right? Setting intent. You're trying to take subconscious thoughts and then create them so that your conscious thoughts are doing the exact same thing. So
why would I come see you as a trainer? You know what I mean? If you didn't have conviction in your voice, if you weren't confident in what you were delivering, the service, you know, the same thing for me. Yeah. I'm big on that too. That's awesome.
You know, it ends up being, you know, like there's easy examples. I use it with baseball a lot, but even just a generic example, like if you were, you know, you go out and buy a car, right? And you buy whatever car that you want. And all of a sudden you leave that parking lot and all of a sudden you see the exact same car multiple times and you start noticing that it's everywhere. That's that system in your brain activating. So, you know, when you're dealing with the sports psychology part or even just mental conditioning, you know, I always talk about a couple different things in understanding and clarifying your own brain. You need to understand what's important in your life. Or else it's really, really hard to set goals. And it's really, really hard to understand kind of the direction, you know, you're going in.
Is this system just getting overworked because we're just like so bombarded with so much stimuli? So we just need to slow things down and be more present and prioritize things better.
So 100%.
And be more, it's not that there's more, Nissan Frontiers. I just got a Nissan Frontier last year and I did notice that. It's not that there's more Nissan Frontiers on the road. It's just that I'm being more conscious, aware of it.
You are. And your brain, and this is, it's subconscious. So your brain doesn't even know that you're doing it. But it will start if you think that that's something important and you have set that out as a goal of yours, even if it's a subconscious goal and it's not conscious, that's something you wrote down. Your brain's going to start searching for that. It's going to even start putting people in your life and putting situations in your life that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And I know that sounds crazy, but it influences decisions you make without you knowing. You know, your brain has 40 thoughts, over 40 thoughts a minute. That's over 10,000 thoughts a day.
Wow.
So, you know, when these thoughts are cycling through at a rapid pace, eventually your brain's going to pick one and it's going to go to that. And when you're dealing with a system like this RAS system, this thing can store up to 8 million images at a time. So it's got to recall, this is why our memory is amazing, but it's fascinating. Your brain has to recall things that you want it to recall. And if you don't constantly put things in your brain that are things that are important to you, at least consciously, then you're never going to recall them when the situation dictates it. You know, like there's a film called The Law of Attraction and it might be on Netflix. I'm not sure. And it is a little different, you know, like, I don't want to say culty. It kind of is a little bit like that, but it's not, I don't really get that out of it as much as it's dealing with the brain. They don't really talk about the brain as much in that, but the point is, like, there's a guy who talks in that about how his goal in life was he wanted to make $100,000 in a year. Right. And so he taped $100 bill above his head, where he slept. So he'd wake up every morning, he'd see this $100 bill. And then before you know it, that's impacting different decisions that he makes throughout his day. Like, hey, should I go out with my buddies tonight? Or maybe I need to work a little bit harder at whatever my goal is. And before you know it, he's not even thinking of that. It's just happening subconsciously. And then in a year he makes $100,000. It just impacts every decision.
Just dialed in.
100%. So I deal with this a lot with baseball players when you're remapping, because we're trying to make this happen quicker. The best example, I always use this, is professional players who have kids. And everybody always wonders why their kids are good athletes. Well, an average person probably just, you know, relates that, or an average mindset, I should say, relates that to, you know, it's God-given. Right. and this is, they're just freak athletes. It's genetics. Well, okay. Some of it is a little genetic, but you got to remember, like, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is a player in the big leagues right now who had a dad who was a major leaguer. This guy every day would bring his kid to watch his batting practice. And before you know it, this kid is putting all these different images in his head. He's activating the RAS. He's bringing in all the sensory information and sorting out what matters and what doesn't without knowing. And he does this for a couple years. And then all of a sudden, when that son, it's time for him to play, his brain just recalls the information that he remembers. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden his swing is how it's supposed to be. And he hasn't even really done anything. So when you're training athletes, like I almost land every lesson or session rather by asking them, okay, when you go home, I want you to write down three things. I want you to write down one thing you want to get better at moving forward, one thing that you learned today, and one thing that you did well. And all I'm trying to do is put more information in there so they start to understand what's important when they actually train. And before you know it, they're doing this on their own and they're writing mm-hmm. daily goals down and, you know, goals that they don't reach. And they look at the goal and they go, well, should I write this goal down again? No, I shouldn't. It's not really important to me. That's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to create awareness. And you introduced me with this to ultimately help any player, any athlete become their own best coach because they're aware of what they're thinking and what they're doing and just become aware of their thoughts on a daily basis. This actually, it's my last piece on this. You're talking about like, well, how do we improve this? There's actually a couple easy ways. Meditation is one. I always talk mindfulness instead because it teaches you how to control your breathing and how to stay in the present. Another one is actually decompression. So like head neck position, because you know, if you're not getting blood flow to that part of the brain, it's not going to be activated as much.
Go get the neck hammock. Go get the neck hammock, exactly. Hang from a bar, hang upside down.
Yep. And then the other one would be, you know, like visualization, visual exercises, just so you're actually seeing something before it happens, because the brain has no idea when you're in the fight and when you're not. You know, if I measured, put probes on your brain and measured yourself, you know, swimming, and then I told you to visualize yourself swimming and we put probes on your brain, it would fire the exact same way. It has no idea. So same exact. Yeah. That's what those three will really help.
I love that you brought mindset into this, because every minute, every second of every day, we have the power and choice to influence this RAS. And we lose track of that. We lose sight of that. Like, that's powerful. We are in control of our destiny, of whatever we want our life to look like, relationships, finances, our work, whatever. So that's so powerful to hear. And I've really been on this journey recently with mindset, and I had a podcast a couple of times ago about scarcity versus abundance mindset and wholeness and performance. And it's just, it's so cool to dive into that. It's so cool. And we're in the driver's seat, you know? So thanks for mentioning that. Let's keep moving here. We got a lot to talk about. So you've also mentioned using timing with every athlete. How is timing incorporated in a training routine, and why is it so important?
Yeah. So baseball timing is pretty much everything. You know, if we want the body, you know, like we said, it's a rotational movement sport, but it also has a linear component to it. So you're going to be lifting your leg at some point to store or, you know, basically get some sort of energy where it's supposed to be. But if your eyes aren't still at a certain time with a ball moving at you, then your brain is basically telling, or your eyes are telling your brain to guess where the pitch is going to be. And we don't want to guess. We want to have some sort of calibration where we see where the ball is going to be. And then we can make a decision, you know, if it's a ball or strike, we can see spin, whatever. And that's a little different of how I teach hitting, is I don't just teach people to hit the fastball. We have to have our timing for the fastball, but I want guys to hit anything that's over the middle of the plate, because you have hand eye. Now we just need to know how to use it. So the timing becomes more of an aspect of, there's actually a specific amount of time that your eyes need to track something, and they need still vision. So this goes back to the feet. If you're not landing close to full foot and you're landing on the toe a lot with your swing, eyes are going to be moving, and then that recalibration starts again. And basically you're late and you're not on time. You're not going to be able to take the swing you want. So eyes need at least between 0.13 and 0.19 seconds, right? Or 0.2 seconds, you could say.
That's not much time.
And I know that's very detailed, but not much time, but it's pretty amazing that your eyes can do that. It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
So why does that number specifically matter? Well, a ball at most levels, a ball leaving the pitcher's hand and getting to home plate, that time frame is between 0.4 and 0.6 seconds. So if you did the simple math, okay, let's just take the fastest one, 0.4. What's half of 0.4? That's 0.2. So the timing in baseball is you got to have your foot on the ground up so your eyes aren't moving when the ball is around halfway to the plate. And that's a very, very sophisticated thing that not a lot of people talk about, but it will control everything. If you have timing, you could have a terrible swing and it doesn't matter. Like, you'll still have a chance because you'll see the ball. And seeing the ball is everything. That's gold in baseball. So that's what I talk about a lot with timing.
Now, what other actionable tips for listeners to start working on their movement and performance?
I think sports in general, and really just any, activity or occupation that has a lot of active movement, or you're just physical all the time. I really believe that in the next 10 years, we're going to go away from tons of strength-based training, meaning like heavy lifting. And it's going to be a lot more focused on joint health and exactly what we're talking about, actually understanding how to move and moving the right way. Because I have felt this as I've gotten older. Like, it doesn't really matter how strong I am and how much I weigh and how heavy I am. If my joints aren't very healthy, my body's not going to feel very good. A lot of cars, we've talked about this, sun salutation, and I think yoga is a really good avenue. I think eating helps a lot with that. So there's not as much inflammation and understanding, nutrition and dieting. I think that's the easiest way to start understanding movement is to actually be aware of what your body's capable but not capable of doing. So, yoga is great for that because it's really hard. But it does tell you a lot about what you're capable of doing. And then maybe from there, you can actually start training things that you're maybe deficient in or not quite as strong, or there's a bad compensation somewhere or whatever it may be.
Now let's talk about you and your training. So what does your self-care look like to maximize your potential and performance?
I think the easy answer is I just go to you.
Blatant plug for me right there. I teed that one up.
Yeah, I mean, I go to you a lot, and I think yours is more of just giving me knowledge of things that maybe I haven't seen or heard in the past. And then it's just staying on top of it, to be honest. It's having discipline to do it. Yep. So that goes back to what we were just talking about of the RAS. If you really want this to be a priority in life, then you have to actually make it important, and you have to have goals with it. And you have to set aside time. So I know for me, if I don't do it first thing in the morning, then I'm not going to do it. So I have to be disciplined with my schedule of waking up, and that I'm a morning person anyway. So it's not super hard. But staying active early in the day, it's like a caffeine boost to me. It definitely releases probably some, I don't know, it would be endorphins, I guess, that allow me to feel a little bit better and, I don't hit that like daily grind as I normally would, at 1 or 2 o'clock.
Now, what about reading? I know you love to read and further your knowledge. So what are you currently reading?
I like, my favorite author is Andy Andrews. So I've read a lot of his books. I like his books because a big part of my life is faith, but it's also self-improvement in terms of mindset. Am I based on a performance mindset where I'm competing against myself? Because if I am, then I'm in a good spot, right? I'm constantly trying to get better every day. That's my slogan for my company is I want to be better than yesterday, but not as good as tomorrow.
I saw that.
And if I'm not like that, and I'm more, focused on competing against others, then my brain usually gets tied up and I'm not focusing on things that are values and that actually matter to me. So I like his books because they're really, really centered around that. There's a good one called The Noticer, probably my favorite book of all time. I've given this book to probably close to 30 people. I probably have four of them at my house because I just give them out when somebody needs a good read. It's called The Traveler's Gift.
I've heard of that.
That's book. One of my favorite books. It's a great book. Awesome mm-hmm. book.
I think I have that. Yeah, I gotta read that. I think I have that book.
Yeah. It's a little bit of, it's like historical nonfiction, but fiction, but inspiration mixed with, there's so many.
Yeah.
Every bookstore I go to, it's in a different section. But yeah, I'm reading an Andy Andrews book right now.
Nice. Yeah. I just read my first fiction book in probably 10 years. And my wife's like, you need to start reading more fiction. That's all you read is nonfiction, self-help. And I love that stuff. It's just like, that's my coffee. That's my endorphin release.
For sure.
But I'm going to look at that because that's kind of a blend of all of them. You said The Traveler's Absolutely. Gift.
And so, I do what, like movement. There are movement books too. I read some of those.
Got to have a balance. So anything exciting lined up this year with your business?
You know, it's been nice with COVID kind of restrictions starting to be lifted a little bit. Some of the guys that I work with at higher levels, I can start to travel a little bit more, which makes it nice because, you know, I really, everything was virtual last year with those guys just because I couldn't really go see them. So, you know, I'll be able to travel a little bit more. You know, I train guys inside for most of the year. And then right now I'm able to do it outside. I have a cage that actually I have it at my house, which is nice. So I can just finish work and walk inside. But yeah, I, this has been a gap business almost. That's what it felt like to start. That's kind of, I've been very fortunate. It's turned into, a career path for me and, just kind of seeing what the next step may be in terms of learning. And in terms of, you know, I've done a lot of stuff with teams, and it's been more on the mental conditioning side, and understanding, just different realms of how we can improve the way we think, and how does that transfer to the field? So I'm sure that will start to kick back up in the early fall. And, we'll kind of see where it takes us.
Now, how can listeners connect with you online to hear more about your business and or make an appointment?
So the easiest way, just can call me. So I do have a website. My website is trainoffthegrid.com. And my phone number is on there. You can also email me. Sometimes it does take you a day or two to get back, but I will get back to you.
He will. He definitely will. And he's a busy guy though. That's good. You're helping a lot of people, man. I'm the same way.
Yeah. It's the tough part. Like my focus always has been, I said, I'm faith. Like I want to love God. I want to put that in the beginning, but I want to love people. And that's literally all I'm trying to do every day. And trying to get my brain to have that thought process. And I can tell you right now, when I'm not doing those two things, I'm out of whack. So, that's what I'm going to try. I'm going to try to love on everyone that I'm able to, speak to and touch and hope that gets passed forward. But yeah, you can call me anytime, even if it's not about baseball and it's just about, wanting to talk. I'm always open ears. I want to learn. I'm a lifelong learner. That's part of kind of what my mission is. So sometimes I just love to learn. I could talk to Matt. I could talk to you all day because you teach me something every single time I talk to you.
Likewise, brother. Likewise. That's awesome. Well, hey, final question here. I'm curious in your answer because you're from here. If you have a friend coming to Rochester who has never been here before, where would you take them?
That is a great question. And I did not have an answer for this, but I'm thinking, I do like beer. That's my one bad habit. Not that I drink. It's more like I used to brew. I used to help out at a brewery.
Yep.
And so that was coming to my mind of like, I love the view on top of Genesee Brew House.
Mm-hmm.
If you've never been there.
High Falls.
Yeah. And it's a outstanding view of the city. And especially as the city starts to grow a little bit more and there's a lot of new developments and apartments. I love that view. I think the stereotypical answer would be you go get someone a garbage plate.
Yep.
But no, I don't know. I think I probably would want them to see high falls. And then, you know, I think Rochester is such a great area because you have a ton of different dynamics. Like you have the west side and the east side, and you have a lot of farmland and you don't have a lot of farmland. And then you have very small towns like East Rochester. And I'm from Hilton, and I love that there's a lot of land out here, and, mm-hmm. you know, it is free living and everybody's friendly here. I just want him to go through a normal day and just take him wherever I felt like going, not necessarily have any plans.
And everything's like 20 minutes apart in Rochester. So you can kind of hit all those spots in a day.
Yeah.
That's a great answer.
And then at the end, they can get a nice session with you in. So reset and have a good sleep.
And then a beer at the end.
There you go.
There we go. Well, hey, John, I appreciate your time today, man. Thank you for what you do for our community. I mean, you're just a passionate guy, a very knowledgeable guy. And most importantly, you just care. You care about your clients. And that shows the first time you meet you. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you, Matt. You likewise, the same as you. I feel the exact same way every time I talk to you. And I appreciate you having me on. Hope to be able to do it again soon.
We will, for sure, man. Well, thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you gained a lot of value from what John shared with us today, and we'll share this with family and friends. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can join me next time with a new local guest in the health and wellness space. I hope you're having an amazing day, and I'll talk with you soon. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Are you dealing with aches and pains on a daily basis? I'm here to tell you that it does not have to be like that. I want to help you get out of pain. I want to help you solve your problems. I want to unravel what happened in the past to lead to where you're at now. So if that's you and you have questions about your health, call me, text me, email me. Go to my website, DriscollChiropracticNY.com. Read a little bit more about myself and my approach. You can call or text 585-672-3870. You can email me info@DriscollChiropracticNY.com. You can find me on Facebook, Driscoll Chiropractic NY, or on Instagram @dr.driscoll. One more thing, guys, if you don't mind popping over to Apple Podcast Reviews and leaving me a 5-star review or any star, it doesn't matter. It's just feedback for me. And the goal and the mission of this podcast is to reach more people and to help more people. So thanks again, guys, for listening. It means the world to me. Buckle up. I got some great guests lined up. Talk to you soon.